Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here Tuesday, May the 25th, 2021, 16 minutes past the hour. And we're going to get started right here off the bat. As many of you know, we have had a lot of talk about the governor's race, the upcoming governor's race in 2022, headed here for Ohio. We had on the Democratic declared candidate for governor in the primary, Democratic primary, Nan Whaley, last Friday. We have had Governor DeWine on in the past. We have had Mary Ellen Withrow on yesterday discussing some of this. Mayor Scott Schertzer will be on in hour number two today. But there is a gentleman who people are talking about. Will he primary Governor DeWine in the Republican primary for governor this year? Former Congressman Jim Renacci in an exclusive interview here. I hope you enjoy this. Here is former Congressman Renacci in his own words.
This is Scott Spears, and with things heating up in the political arena in Ohio, there's so much going on these days. Vax-a-million, an upcoming governor's race, the lifting of the health mandates by the state of Ohio. It's great to talk to a man who has been on the Ohio political scene for many, many years, former four-term member of the House of Representatives, Congressman Jim Renacci. Jim, how are you?
Good. How are you today?
Doing well. Vax-a-million kicks off Wednesday this week. What do you make of the whole Vax-a-million idea? $5 million in 5 weeks.
Well, I've said this several times. I think it was a ridiculous idea. I think the governor could have spent that money, $5 million, in better ways. We've had a unemployment system, the computer system that has just failed, causing billions of dollars of waste and cost to Ohio taxpayers. Businesses have been shut down over the years. So many things that $5 million could have been done to help many people that are definitely in need. And like I said, even fix the computer systems on the unemployment, which is just one area that I believe it was something that should not have been done. But of course, there are those that will argue that the governor will argue that it is bringing more people to get vaccinated. In the end, here's what's going to happen. Five people are going to be happy. 11 million people, less five, are going to be unhappy because today they're thinking they could win $5 million. After it's over, people are going to say, why was that spent on just five people?
Mm. Why do you believe the governor did this?
I don't know. I mean, again, many of the ideas this governor has are not Republican conservative ideas. I think that's one of the reasons why he does not have the approval of Republicans in the state. There's polling out there that shows that most Republicans do not approve of the way the governor has handled not only the economy but the coronavirus issues. So I think this was a way that he believes he could get some more popularity. Let's face it, when you're giving money away like the president is doing and like Congress is doing, people do like the idea of getting free money, but I don't think it's a conservative way of spending that money.
You, of course, are a member of the Republican Party. Mike DeWine is an identified Republican. Where do you think he has drifted away from Republican values?
Well, look, we spend too much, we tax too much, there's too many policies that are not good, solid Republican policies. When it comes to, you know, gun issues, we have a governor who still is talking about, you know, the strong Ohio legislation, the red flag type laws that he wants to push. That's not Republican. We do have a governor who continues to spend money the best example I can give you is Chief of Staff has recently resigned or I should say, has been reassigned. And what's he do? He finds another position for her so that the state can pay her additional money while moving somebody else to the chief of staff position. I mean, these are things that conservative Republicans and Republicans who realize that we spend too much wouldn't be doing. Our policies are bad. Now, some of those have come from past governors and past legislatures, but we don't have a governor who seems to really be taking our state and looking at ways to improve it. I just saw a text that shows the top 20 states that have recovered from the coronavirus. The majority of those states are Republican states, and yet Ohio is not in the top 20. So all these statistics continue to go back to, why isn't our Republican governor doing what other Republican governors are doing? Many people, as I travel the state, say they wish we had a governor like Governor DeSantis. Why isn't our governor doing things like Governor DeSantis? And I think that really distinguishes between a conservative and a true Republican, who will be Governor DeSantis, versus Governor DeWine, who still seems to be going down a path of policies that pretty much lean toward the Democratic side of the equation, not the Republican side.
Why do you think he has not acted like other Republican governors?
Well, that's a good question. But again, what I've said all along is the governor of Ohio has acted like he always has acted. If you go back to his past, if you go back to his days in the House and his days in the Senate, he was part of the Gang of Eight. He was part of the, you know, much of the gun legislation that was pushed through by the Gang of Eight. Many of his ideas were left-leaning, you know, and in many cases, Democrat ideas. So he hasn't really changed. I don't think we have seen a governor that's reacting different. I think we have seen a governor who continues to take on the same policies and principles that he has all along, and many of those are left-leaning, which is why, if you look at polling, he does have a good approval rating from Democrats, and his approval rating is very, very low among Republicans.
If you had been in his position when the pandemic started, how would you have handled it?
Well, for me, it would have been a lot easier to look at it because I look at our Constitution. I love what Governor Noem has said. You know, she brought in the health departments and listened to them. She brought in the hospital systems within her state. Again, much smaller state, listened to them. Then she brought in her attorneys and listened to them. And they basically said, look, it's unconstitutional for you to put mask mandates in place. It's unconstitutional for you to determine what business is essential, what business is not essential. It's unconstitutional for you to be setting, you know, some of the curfews. So she said she's going to do what the Constitution tells her to do, and I agree with that. We should have not mandated many of these things. We shouldn't have determined what business is essential and what business isn't essential. We should have recommended. The Department of Health should have come up with guidelines, but not mandated guidelines. And I think we'd be much better off if, in many cases, we would have recommended, tried to work with the legislature. Those are the kind of things I would have done. I mean, I've talked to legislators, House and Senate members, who said this governor was just doing things and they were finding out the next day or hours afterwards. That's not a way to govern. That's not a way to bring people together. And that's not a way to get really to the will of the people. It's one of the reasons why you have a House and Senate who actually voted to take some of these unwarranted and unconstitutional powers away from the governor in the future. So I think what I would have done is I would have followed the Constitution and made recommendations, worked with the people in Ohio, worked with the businesses, but not have mandated unconstitutional ways of doing business.
I think a lot of people would say that a lot of people were dying from coronavirus, a lot of people were being hospitalized, that hospitals were filling up, certainly over the holiday season. How would you have handled something like that differently than Governor DeWine?
Well, again, I would have always leaned toward the Constitution. What is constitutionally allowed and what's not allowed. I would have looked at the numbers. I would not have come out and scared people either. I can tell you that the biggest problem early on was Governor DeWine and his director of health scared people. I mean, they said this could be 10,000 a day, and they were using radical numbers, and people were scared. They scared the elderly. They scared a lot of people that to this day look back and say, wow, I never really thought it would not as be as bad as it was. And let's face it, I think in the end, the governor needs to be the individual, the person of reason who listens to the legislature, works with the legislature, and makes sure that there are other things that could be done. I mean, you got to listen to, you got to work with your healthcare systems, but at the same time, you can't try and manage the population moves. I know in my nursing homes that I still do some consulting with, there was a fear factor, there was a concern. I mean, all these things came from the governor's office directly down. That was probably the biggest concern that I had, and many people had as well. And by the way, I think you do have to monitor the beds. You did have to look at some of those things. But at the same time, I'm not sure we were in a position that we were being told we were going to get to. And I think that was probably the biggest concern with what happened.
Why do you think that was done? Do you think they were misinformed? What's your rationale behind that?
Well, it's a great question. I don't know the answer because when you talk to people and you ask them, why was the governor doing this and why was the governor doing that? What most people were told, even the House members I talked to and Senate members, they had no idea. They couldn't see the statistics. Nobody was giving them information. They didn't know what the governor was looking at. They didn't know what he was where he was getting his facts to determine what he was doing. So a lot of this was not opened to at least the House and Senate members. You know, there wasn't enough transparency. And in the end, I'm not sure many people know why he was doing it. I think in the beginning, he was trying to show the country that he was leading the way. But clearly, one year later, you can see that his moves were not as good as many of the other states who did the right thing when it came to the Constitution.
On June the 2nd, our health orders will be lifted here in the state of Ohio, I believe, except for nursing homes and some other areas. Do you think this is the right thing to do at this time?
Well, I do. But remember, this governor is lifting them because he knew that the House and Senate law that was going to take his authority away from him was going to lift them anyway. So I do believe it is. It's time to open up. Look, I have a son in the healthcare business, a doctor in an emergency room. He said now it's time. It's time to open up. And he even admitted in the beginning that, hey, there were some concerns. And he used to call me and say, hey, you know, we've got to do some of these shutdowns and lockdowns today. He looks back, remember, a physician who was seeing patients coming in New York City was saying, hey, you know what? We need to really take a look at this today. He would agree that that there were a number of other issues that probably needed attention to, like the economic side of things. And let's face it, let's talk about some of the depression and suicides that went up, the loneliness. There was a lot of that as well, and all of that had to be taken in consideration. I do think we did have, you know, looking back, yes, we did have a pandemic. But at the same time, we had an economic issue as well. And I think you have to take all of those things into consideration, which some governors did, and some governors are coming out of this much better. As I said, I think there is a tweet out there from, I think it's, can't remember exactly where it came from, the 20 states are coming out of this much better. Most of those 20 states are Republican states, except for two or three of them. But Ohio is not even in the top 20 of states recovering. So clearly we made some moves that did not allow us to compete with other states as we moved through the coronavirus.
I sit here in Marion County, and as these health orders are being lifted, one of the reasons for the vax-a-million, as it's been explained to a lot of people, is our numbers are not where they need to be as far as people vaccinated in Ohio. I believe statewide we're somewhere between 40 and 50% right now. Here in Marion County, the health commissioner said we were at 35% as of last Thursday. Why are those numbers so low, in your opinion?
Well, look, there are a lot of people that, as I travel the state, don't want the virus, don't want the vaccination. They feel that it was not officially approved in the time frame that was necessary by the FDA. They don't want it put in their bodies. I mean, I hear that all the time, and I say there are some that that wanted it and have gotten it. And today, anybody can get it. So if you want it, you can get it. There are others that don't. I mean, I consult with a nursing facility where 40% of the staff did not want the vaccine. They felt that, you know, the odds of survival, which is in some cases 97-98%, were much better than taking a vaccine that has not been fully tested, and everybody does not know, you know, what in the end will be the results from a vaccine 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. So, I know even in my family, some people have gotten a vaccine. Some people don't want to get the vaccine. I think that's got to be their choice. It's one of the reasons why I don't think putting a $1 million prize up is logical. All you're doing is really taking those that may not have wanted to get it or weren't even considering getting it, and now they're just looking at it as a lottery prize. Not the right reason to get a vaccine. You should get a vaccine because it's what you want, you believe it helps, and the concerns that many have are not the concerns you might have. You bypass that all of that when you put, as I call it, a $1 million opportunity in front of somebody.
When it came down to the personal decision for yourself, did you take the vaccine?
I do have a vaccine. I did take it, and I took it because I still consult with nursing homes. I could not go in to the facilities without the vaccine. So that became a real issue for me from a business perspective. And I also didn't want to walk into a nursing facility and bring harm to any patient. So for me, it was a business decision. An opportunity to make sure that I can continue to consult and work with some businesses that, I did not want to walk in and cause issues with their staff or potentially their residents as well.
Do you have concerns that you've heard from some other Ohioans about the vaccine now that you have taken it?
Well, look, I don't have concerns, but I think that's the right that everybody has to have. I do have health professionals in my family who have all said, there's no issues with it. So it's a little easier for me. But again, I think that's just everybody's decisions, whether it's the mask or the vaccine. I've said this time and time again, government shouldn't mandate it. Government shouldn't require either of those things. Those should be, if you want to wear a mask, you should wear a mask. If you don't want to wear a mask, you shouldn't have to wear a mask. If you want to take the vaccine, same thing. You should get the vaccine. And if you don't want to get the vaccine, you should not be forced to get it.
We talked earlier about the health orders in Ohio being lifted on June the 2nd. And as you did say, and I believe the date was June 23rd, was the Ohio legislature was planning on introducing a bill to lift those vaccines or mandates in Ohio, excuse me. Do you believe on Governor DeWine's part that this was strictly political, the June 2nd lifting of the health mandates?
Well, I do. And I think it was political because you got to remember, he already had a date certain that he wanted to lift it. I think it was, 100 for 100,000 residents. So whatever those numbers were, he continued to say he was not going to lift the orders until the state met that, whether it was 50 or 100, I can't remember, per 100,000 residents, he would not lift those orders. And out of the blue, he sees a few polls that show his approval ratings not there. He also realizes that on January 23rd, he's going to have some real problems I think that would be embarrassing for the state legislature to pull those things down. But at the same time, my biggest concern is he still is paralyzing people over Memorial Day weekend. It's almost like, what is the difference between June 2nd or rolling it back to the Friday before Memorial Day? These are things that I just don't understand. There are so many events, so many things occurring, so many opportunities for businesses to, you know, get their feet back underneath them over Memorial Day weekend, and the governor still holds out to June 2nd, which is another day almost just like pulled out of the hat. There's no rhyme or reason where June 2nd comes from versus should it be the Friday before Memorial Day. But I do know he was definitely pulling, he's definitely bypassed his original decision, which was we were not going to pull these down until we got to a certain level. And we're not there yet, but he still has decided June 2nd's the day.
Up to this point in his term, how would you grade Governor DeWine on a whole for his first term as governor?
Governor DeWine is a maintenance governor. He has not put our state in any better position than other states. In fact, even before the coronavirus in 2019, we were losing jobs while other states were growing jobs. So I really do think that the people of Ohio just need to look at it. Are we better off today than we were before Governor DeWine took office? And the answer is no. Our taxes are higher. Our spending is higher. You know, we're losing more jobs. We're losing companies. We've gotten through the coronavirus, but so is all the other states. And as I told you, almost 20 other states are doing much better than us in getting through it. So I think the best judge is where we're at before the governor took office and where we're at today, and how much have we lost ground. We're losing jobs. We're losing ground in jobs. We're losing ground in statistics. We're losing a congressional seat. We're losing representation in Washington. We're losing electoral college vote. And again, I'm not going to blame all of this on Governor DeWine, but I will say the trend is there, and he's done nothing to change that. This governor is a maintenance governor. He's just somebody who wants the status quo. I do believe in these days and these times, we can't just be status quo anymore. Ohio has to be able to compete with 49 other states for business, for employment, and for families and growth, and we're losing in all those grounds.
That being said, Governor DeWine will be up for re-election in 2022. He has said he intends to run again on the Republican side. Usually an incumbent governor does get the nomination of their party, but this might be a different situation with the pandemic and the poll numbers inside the Republican Party regarding Governor DeWine. What is a Republican to do with an incumbent Republican governor at this point if you don't want to continue on this path that you just described?
So the question is, what does the party do? What does the governor do?
How does this change with Governor DeWine planning to run for re-election?
Well, look, I think the governor needs to look at many things. He needs to look at the state. He needs to look at what he has done. I think any governor should look and see what he has done. This governor said he was only going to run for one term. He has decided, at least he has said he's going to run for another term. Remember, none of that means anything anymore. I found that out in 2018 when Josh Mandel said he was running for Senate and then steps out of the race with 2 months left. So until you file, until you sign, doesn't mean you're running. But I do know this governor has has to really look and see, does the Republican Party want this governor to continue? I'm sure that many establishment Republicans will be happy. I mean, one of the problems in Ohio is we are a pay-for-play state. By the way, we're the seventh. A 2019 study showed that Ohio was one of the seventh most corrupt states in the country because of many of the pay-for-play schemes. Since 2019, we have had a number of issues, including the First Energy issue with, you know, SB 5 or House Bill 5, and then we've had issues with Democrats in some of the local cities. Toledo, we had issues there. Cincinnati, we've had some corruption there. So Ohio might be, I think the Columbus Dispatch said that Ohio might be moving closer and closer to number one. But there is a lot of pay-for-play that goes on. There are a lot of Republican infrastructure that will support a governor, whether that governor is good, bad, or indifferent. The problem is that infrastructure support enough to get to 51% to win re-election? And I think that this governor will have to make that decision. I doubt that he would want to lose in his last election ever. So I think those are the issues he'll have to make a decision on. And Republicans will also have a choice to make, chance to make a decision. They'll have to decide whether they want to continue down the path of what we've done over the last 2 or 3 years, or do they want to change? And I think that's what's good about elections. I think that's what's good about primaries. And ultimately, I do think that, that's how candidates are judged as to what happens in the election.
Do you think it would be difficult to primary an incumbent governor?
Well, I will always say, if you look at statistics, it's always very difficult to primary any incumbent. Most incumbents win 98-99% of the time. I don't care whether it's a governor. I don't care whether it's a mayor. I don't care whether it's a, you know, a congressional seat. But I will tell you, I think this year might be a little different. I think people are fed up with what's going on. They're fed up with what's going on in Washington. They're fed up with what's going on in our state. So I think in the end, an incumbent is a dangerous position to be in. Now, I won't tell you that it wasn't in the past either. I mean, most people don't like incumbents 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 6 years ago, but they always like their incumbent. I just don't know if that's different this time. I do believe there is enough there's enough out there, and I see the polling, that people are just not happy. Republicans are just not happy with this incumbent governor today. But this will be a year of change. Look, we're going to have many, many primaries in the Republican Party. We already have one in the 16th District Congressional race. I'm hearing others are going to be primaried. I think people are fed up this year, so it might be a little different year. But if you look at the stats and you look at the statistics, always difficult to defeat any incumbent. I've defeated two in my history of elections, lost to one who was well-funded. So incumbency definitely gives you the advantage.
That being said, do you plan to be that option against Governor DeWine in the Republican primary for governor?
Well, look, I have said that we do need somebody to primary Governor DeWine and defeat Governor DeWine. I do not think he has set our state up in the best interest. He's a nice person. He's a good guy. But from the standpoint of governance and governing, I do not believe he's done a very good job. I have a 9-month-old grandson that I worry about the state. I worry about what we're leaving him, and I am concerned. So I have said that I will continue to look at those options. I've had many people ask me to get in this race. We're going to continue to look at the polling. We're going to look at the opportunities. I'm meeting with donors, and I'm meeting with people across the state every day, talking to them. We're going to make a decision very soon, but I do think there needs to be an option. But it needs to be an option with somebody who could defeat this governor. And I do believe today, if the election was today, based on the polling I have seen from some very reputable firms, that I would defeat Governor DeWine. But politics is an unusual thing, and today is one thing, tomorrow is another. The primary is a long way off, and people seem to forget the past and only vote for the person they're thinking about at the time they walk into the voting booth. And let's face it, next May or June or July, whenever the primary is, because I keep hearing the primary may be delayed just because of the congressional seats not being reestablished until a later date, people's minds may change, and we'll see where we're at then.
In your own mind, have you set a date that you want to decide by if you're going to do this?
No, not really. You know, one thing I've learned about politics, you don't jump in when people want you to jump in. You jump in when it's the right time to jump in, when you have fully planned, when you have, you know, a plan in place, when you have options in place, when you've talked to the right people. This isn't a decision for me. This is a decision for Ohioans. So I made one mistake in my life, and that was jumping into a Senate race when I wasn't prepared. I didn't look at all the options, and I was forced into it because the time was very short. I had less than 45 days to get into a Senate race. I was asked by the President of the United States to do that. I said, that's my biggest regret. I jumped in without planning, without evaluating, without putting, you know, structural things underneath. And I still almost defeated an incumbent. I lost by 150,000 net votes out of 4.4 million, got outspent $33.5 million to $4 million. A lot of people don't realize that. Still almost defeated an incumbent, but I truly wasn't prepared, and I had to catch up along the way. I don't want to do that. There's still some time here, and we're going to do it at the right time. And if we do it, it'll be done with a good frame underneath so that we can move this system forward.
There has been a lot of attention paid that President Trump's former campaign manager, Brad Parscale, has, I don't believe he's working on a paid basis with you, but that he has approached you, that he wants you to run against Governor DeWine. How did that all come about?
Well, Brad Parscale has been a friend of mine for many years. I helped in 2016 when candidate Trump was running. I was one of the first people to endorse candidate Trump. In fact, one of the first elected officials to do so. Everybody else was scared to death. It's kind of comical. You hear people say, well, I've supported President Trump since day one. Now, most people didn't support President Trump until long after his nomination speech at the convention in Cleveland. I was one of the few people that was supporting candidate Trump all the way back into March of 2016. That's how I got to know Brad Parscale. We've been friends ever since. He always kept in touch with me, and we kept in touch even through the 2020 election when he saw what Governor DeWine was doing, when he saw that Governor DeWine was, you know, in many cases, not really stepping out in front and trying to support this President Trump at the time. And I think President Trump has realized that now as well. He tweeted, I think it was probably 6 or 7 months ago, he looks forward to a primary of the Governor DeWine in Ohio. So Brad's kept in touch with me and has looked at some polling. In fact, Trump's pollster is one of the polls that I've seen that was pushed through by Brad, and that poll came out that if the election was today, I defeat Governor DeWine, and he contacted me right after that and said, look, we got to sit down and talk about this, and we've had numerous conversations, and actually we're going to be meeting face-to-face here real soon.
If you do decide to do this, would Brad be somebody you would want involved in your campaign?
Absolutely. Brad is a... not only does he have the Trump infrastructure, he understands politics. He's actually working with Governor DeSantis right now in his reelection. He's also working with a challenger, Caitlyn Jenner, out in California right now. And he does believe that Governor DeWine can be defeated today, you know, with the right candidate. He believes I am that candidate. So we're going to, you know, after our next couple of meetings, we'll make some decisions, but I would want to have his oversight and at least from a friend, and he's agreed to do that, continue to oversee this campaign if I do decide to jump in.
We talked a little bit earlier about corruption in the state of Ohio. On July 21st, 2020, the FBI arrested Larry Householder and four others in connection with the $60 million bribery case involving First Energy. Householder is still there. What do you make of that situation?
Well, Well, it's interesting, and I've said this all along. As Republicans, first off, there has to be due process. So even though someone is indicted, he's not convicted yet. And I think those are decisions the House has to make. The other thing is, which is really interesting, is if you look at his election, even though he was indicted, he still got 70% of the vote in that district to reelect him. And his son, with the householder name, was elected as a county commissioner. So I have said this time and time again, you know, it's going to be up to the will of the House and what they decide. But I don't think Republicans should overturn an election where 70% voted for someone. And I also don't think we should be in the game as Republicans of not allowing for due process. So it's going to be a tough vote, tough decision. But at this time, I do believe he's entitled to due process. And number one, I don't believe that Republicans should overturn election results either when 70% of his district voted to put him back in that seat, even though he was already indicted. Now, I will say the flip side is there are some say that he's not able to perform the duties in the position he's in. And I would have to evaluate that and see if he is able to represent and perform those duties before I would make a decision as a state House member.
It's very interesting. This obviously was a bribery case, involved money. A lot of these cases do involve money. You have been very successful in business. Could you see a situation where, if you do decide to run, where you would self-fund your campaign? I know that had come up in the past, in past elections.
Well, look, I was planning on doing some self-funding in the governor's race when I first got in 2017. When I was asked to get in the Senate race, I was told that I would never have to self-fund. I was told by an individual at the RNC at the time that if I get in this race, that there'd be $25 to $30 million. I would never have to self-fund. It was one of the reasons why I left the governor's race and went to the Senate race. I left because not only the president asked me to do it, but some people who were also supportive of the president and underneath the president's wing told me that if I get into the Senate race, I would never have to self-fund. And that was very disappointing. I still had to self-fund some of my Senate race. But many people say, well, if Jim Renacci would have funded his entire Senate race, he might be a senator today. The truth of it is, maybe that's the case and maybe that's not the case. But I do remember being told that if you get in the race, you won't have to self-fund. And that's the problem with politics. When it comes to the governor's race, look, I'm always willing to do what's best for my state and my country. I've done that in every election. I've self-funded part of my elections. So it's not like this would be a first time. I have not self-funded an entire election. But when it comes to this race, if I get in, I'm going to have enough funds to defeat the incumbent. And again, I'm not saying that that won't come from others as well, but I am going to work really hard to show people that this incumbent governor can be defeated, and I'm hoping not only can I get their support, but I can earn their vote as well.
If you decide not to run for governor, is there any way that you would vote for Mike DeWine or endorse him in a primary or a general election?
You know, it would be very difficult for I'd be very, and I don't know what the word I want to say is, but it would be very hard for me to endorse or vote for him at this time. I do believe that it would be where I would leave it. I would cast an empty vote in that slot if I was not in the race, only because I think from a Republican Party standpoint, we have to start looking. It used to be, look, I've learned a lot about politics. I was in business for 38 years. I got into this political game. I've learned you can't trust a lot of people in politics. But here's the other thing I've learned. The only way you fix the system is not vote for the better of the two candidates. Vote for the candidate that really represents your ideals and your principles. And if neither of them do, then you don't vote for either of them. And I know there's many Republicans that might get mad at me for saying that. But the truth of it is, Republicans, not all Republicans are Republicans. And I hate the word rhino because that doesn't mean anything to me. The truth of it is, if you're a Republican, that means you believe in the principles and the policies of the Republican Party, and you believe in less government, less taxes, you believe in the Second Amendment, you're pro-life, all of these things that make for good Republicans, and yet we vote for Republicans that might only believe in half of those things, or a quarter of those things, or clearly believe in more spending, more government, you know, all the things which are not even Republican values and principles. And there's where I don't believe we should support a candidate who's really taking our country, our state, our city, our communities in the wrong direction, even if they're Republican.
We have about 10 minutes left here with Congressman, former Congressman Renacci, and we certainly do appreciate this candor and conversation. I think it's good for the people listening in the audience today. Congressman Renacci, obviously President Trump won Ohio both times by large margins, didn't win the main election last time, but certainly did carry Ohio. With your connection through Brad Parscale, have you spoken or heard any messages through President Trump about a run for the primary, Republican primary governor of Ohio, or if he would support you in that case, very popular in Ohio?
Sure. Well, I will tell you that the president and I have not spoken for a few months now, but I've heard through Brad that the president always remembers me, always very supportive of me, always remembers that I was with him from day one, and always remembers that I'm still with many of his policies and principles. So I'm hoping that as we make a decision and we move forward, that the president will take a look at this race. But again, if he does or if he doesn't, I do know that in the background, I've got an individual in President Trump who is very supportive of me and is very supportive of the friendship we've had over the last, you know, 6 years plus. So I look forward to maybe someday getting an opportunity to talk to him about this. But and I know he's coming to Ohio very soon, I'm sure, to support the candidate in the 16th District congressional race. And maybe I'll get a chance to see him then.
Has he ever said anything to you in regard to Governor DeWine when you have spoken?
You know, he's never really said anything negative about Governor DeWine. He's always asked questions. He's seen the way the state works. He's seen that many of these individuals never really did support him. He's been reminded a few times about how many of them talked about him back in October 2016. Many statewide officials have said they wouldn't vote for him. He's not the type of person we should have as president. And I think he realizes that there are many people here in Ohio that, even though Ohio is a Trump state, there are many people that get elected by saying they are Trump candidates, but he understands they're truly not Trump candidates. And I think you're going to see that more and more. He is starting to finally realize Ohio is a Trump state, but there are candidates out there who say they're Trump candidates, which really aren't. And I think he talks about that and has mentioned that to me even the last time I talked to him. I always chuckle. The last time I talked to him, he said to me in 2018, Renee, so you got deep stated by your own party. And I had to laugh. He said that in front of a crowd also in up in Cleveland the last time that he was here for an event, because he does really... It's not about the Republican Party to him. It's really about making a difference for Americans and making America great again. And I think that's the one thing that always appealed to me with him was his willingness to step out, be a disruptor. Even though he was the leader of the Republican Party, he wants to be a disruptor of the system. And that's what I appreciate. We need more disruptors, and we need his policies and principles to be able to move forward wherever you're at, whether it's a state government, whether it's city government, county government. We need those policies and principles that many people agreed with, even though they might not have liked him over the last 4 years.
Obviously, Congressman Renacci, you have laid out why Governor DeWine has not done a good job as a Republican governor, in your opinion. What would be the main reason you would not to decide to run in the Republican primary, if you choose not to? What's holding you back at this point?
Well, nothing's holding me back other than making sure the infrastructure's in place. I mean, that's really the key. Making sure that it's easy to jump in, and there are people that jump in and they think they can win. I learned a big lesson in 2018, like I said earlier. In 2018, I realized jumping in, there are times you jump in, there are times you don't jump in. You know, sometimes you have to wait until the incumbent stumbles, makes a mistake, does the wrong things. We have a governor who has stumbled multiple times, but I can tell you his pattern is he will stumble many more over the next 10 months. So the real goal will be to watch, see. I will also believe that he'll change the way he handles things. He'll start to do things different. He's got to move more toward the right center. He's got to realize he's got to get through a primary. It's a very difficult thing to do when you've been left of center for the last couple of years to now move right of center. And when he comes back right of center, I have to be able to remind people, if I am in the race, that you can't have a governor who now is telling you he's right of center but has really voted left of center most of the time in his 2 or 3 years in office. And that'll be the biggest challenge. But that's going to be the real key. What is the best time? When is the best time? I mean, it does seem like every time we turn around, the Maximilian seems to be another great time. I mean, I don't see how he can think this was a good thing. I have not talked to one member of the House or one member of the state Senate that believes it was a good thing. We have Democrat governors who don't believe it's a good thing. We have Republican governors who don't believe it was a good thing. We have Governor Cuomo who thinks it was a good thing. That's a bad sign. So every time you look, this governor makes another misstep. But clearly, I think there'll be more coming. I do think this first energy debacle is a real problem for this governor. Let's face it, his largest donor in the last cycle was the Ohio Republican Party. His second largest donor was the Summit County Republican Party. His third largest donor outside of him was First Energy. And then if you go back and look at First Energy's donations to the Ohio Republican Party, First Energy's donations to the Summit County Republican Party, there seems to be a trend. And then look at First Energy's donations to the National Governors Association. There does seem to be a trend that this governor has definitely tied his hands and his arms inside of this First Energy. And it'd be very difficult if all of a sudden, and that's why I say the First Energy debacle has not been finalized yet. It'll be interesting. Randuzzo, his PUC director, another issue. Look, he was appointed by the governor. Now all of a sudden, he's been indicted. Or maybe he hasn't been indicted yet, but at least the FBI has come in and raided his place. He's starting to sell assets in Ohio. There seems to be a trend here with this governor and First Energy, and I think there will be other issues come out over the next few months.
Have you spoke to Governor DeWine about any of this?
No, you know, it's interesting. I've actually reached out to Governor DeWine twice, once after he was elected, and I told him I would help him in any way he could. Several months later, I reached out to him again and said I would help him in any way I could. I never heard back, and that's a sign right there that he really didn't care for my help, and that's okay. That's all right. But I do think that was a mistake, because I do think that I could have been a great ally and helpful to him. Because of my business background, I've had businesses throughout the state. I mean, he put everything in to his lieutenant governor's position in John Husted. And let's face it, John Husted is a career politician that does not have the background and experience of a business guy yet. He's heading up Innovation Ohio, and the governor put him in this position where I do think the governor could have taken somebody like myself and said, because I just want Ohio to be better. I want Ohio to be able to compete, and I would have done anything I could to help him make Ohio move in that direction. But,
yeah, Yeah, two quick questions here, and I think they're important, and I appreciate, again, your candor on these questions. The relationship with Brad Parscale, President Trump's former campaign manager, a lot of people know that he was involved in an incident in September of 2020 in which he was hospitalized under the Baker Act in Fort Lauderdale after Fort Lauderdale was told, the police department, that he was threatening to harm himself and there were some bruises on his wife. Do you think that this, if he were a part of your campaign, could work against you in any way?
Well, look, it's an advisor, and if people want to attack an advisor, Brad Parscale's a very smart person. He's been rehired by the Trump team. He is now the political director for President Trump. You know, he does understand the mechanisms of Ohio. He does understand the machinery underneath Ohio. Hey, people can attack the people on your team all they want. What they really should be doing is attacking the person running. So I welcome it. I'm sure he welcomes it. He doesn't really care. He's done very well in his life. He's not a career politician. He's a businessman. He was wealthy before President Trump grabbed him 10 years ago and said, I want you on my team. He still is fine, and he still will do fine going forward. So here's what I look for in somebody that I would bring on my team, somebody with the ability to do the job and to have the background and experience and the undercarriage necessary to move the machine forward. And that's everything that Brad Parscale has. So I appreciate him being willing to advise and being willing to help. And I look forward to his guidance down the road if I do enter this race.
Congressman, final question here. You obviously care about the state of Ohio. You have ran for office in the state of Ohio. You certainly have a lot of misgivings at this point about Governor DeWine. You have been involved in political campaigns, and time is going by. I certainly understand at this point that you have not made your decision, but by hiring or talking with consultants and doing town halls and talking with the party, as you said you have done, what would be the chance at this point that you wouldn't run?
Yeah, I think you've asked this already, but it's the same. My answer will be the same. Look, there are a lot of things I need to do to finalize this decision. I want to change Ohio. I want to make Ohio different. I want to have an Ohio that can compete with other states. And I want to have Ohio that I'm proud to say I was able to help change for my grandson and people's grandsons and their children and grandchildren. So I think I still have that ability to do that. I think I'm going to find the place. I originally thought I could do it from the outside. And quite frankly, if I think I can do more from the outside than on the inside, that would be probably the reason that I would make the decision not to do this. But I learned a long time ago the best way to make change is on the inside, in the right position where you can make a difference. And I do think until Ohio gets a governor and leadership that realizes we have to compete with 49 other states, we have to quit with 20th century ideas of economic development in the 21st century. We got to do things like the University of Akron study shows that we are falling behind, we're losing ground, and we can't compete. That study was finalized in November of last year. And some of the ideas in there, plus some of the ideas I have put forward, until we find a leader who's not worried about the next election, but more worried about the next generation, I think we need to find people like that. I know I am more worried about the next generation than I am about the next election, and I'll make a decision based on that here in the near future.
And in parting, people listening probably would say that doesn't sound like a guy who's not going to run.
Well, I think people should just stay tuned. I've said all along, if there is somebody that I see out there that is better, that can step up and remove and change our state and make a difference, I would certainly be willing to support a candidate like that as well. I have not seen that person. I have not talked to that person. I've not seen anyone who is willing to step up and fight. One thing that people listening in your audience can realize about Jim Renacci is You know, when I was handed the challenge of running against Sherrod Brown, who is an incumbent, 45 years in office, isn't it amazing that nobody would take that mantle up except me? 2 years later, we hear Senator Portman stepping down, and now you have 8 or 9 people jumping into the race. If you're afraid of the fight, I'm not sure you're the right person. Your listeners can clearly realize that Jim Renacci has never been afraid of the fight. I've taken on 2 incumbents and defeated them, taken on a 3rd incumbent with very little time, and yet I'm not afraid of the fight. I have been told if I jump in the Senate race, it'd be an easier race because people know me, they know my background experience, and I already got almost 2.1 million votes just 2 years ago. But the truth for me is I want to make a difference, and I don't think a senator today makes any difference to the direction our country is going.
Does a governor?
I do think governors can and will make a difference in the way our country is going, which is why I think Governor DeSantis, Governor Noem, if you start to look at these governors that are making a difference for their states, it's because they have said no more to the federal overreach, and we are going to run our state like it should have been and like our forefathers wanted us to run it, and that is as an independent organization or state that competes with 49 other states. And if you do that, I think you can make a big difference for your communities, for your state, and really how your state is looked at in the entire nation.
And with 30 seconds left to go, should Mike DeWine be worried as an incumbent governor who plans at this point to run again?
If I was looking at the polling that I've looked at, and I've seen 5 polls, all independent, only one that I actually commissioned, 4 others, Mike DeWine has anywhere from a 29% to a 34% approval rating among Republicans. He has 37% of Republicans that say they will never vote for him again. If I was in that position, I would definitely be worried.
Mm. Former Congressman Jim Renacci. Jim, this was great, and I hope you come back many, many times. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Look forward to it, and have a blessed day.
Stay well. Bye-bye.
Is wearing a safety belt at the time of the crash. A passenger